and welcome to Wine with Meg and Mel. We're here to help you navigate the world of wine. I'm Mel Gilchrist, joined by Master of Wine, Meg Brotman. And Meg, it's a bit of a depressing episode, isn't it?
No, it's not. So you seem to think that people don't like the geeky stuff, and it turns out that people do like the geeky stuff.
Well, no, I just... It depends.
I'm not going to be too
geeky,
sciencey, I promise.
No,
I have
the
whole
stuff
fact
is
sheets
good.
In front of
we
me.
We just don't want, like, clones. The clones do my head in. But
we're talking about fungal diseases. It's even
yeah,
worse.
It's not sexy. But it is, like, this time of year, there's a lot of talk of it, especially, like, we've had a crazy season, and I think a lot of people don't really realize what that means.
Yeah.
So we're going to cover what everything that can go wrong, like what defines a bad season, from diseases to frost to...
low yields.
Exactly.
To too much rain.
So
to too little rain.
Not the sexiest episode, but I think it's really interesting.
I think it's very interesting. Yeah. We have a wee wine to finish it off with as well.
And we'll finish it off with a nice little wine.
It's going to be a very dry episode.
Hey, first, have you seen my T-shirt?
Master of Cibrage.
Yeah.
Great.
And so this one, and then my back.
Hard for Shadow. Did you make that?
No, this is the one that killed my sister-in-law.
That's right.
Baby.
That's right.
I know. Isn't it great?
I just got one made for my brother-in-law saying, never fight naked.
Why?
He did his book launch on Saturday night, and he was talking about when he was a security guard when he just got out of the seminary and he didn't have any skills. And he was a security guard in Mount Druid Shopping Mall, and it was a gun job, and they basically gave him 2 seconds of gun training. And he said the best advice that he was ever given was a big Maori boy. He said to him, never fight naked, mate. And I think in the naked bit refers to the gun.
Oh,
so I thought I'll get him a T-shirt.
Oh, that's good. I like it.
Yes, and a coffee cup. While I was in
God.
At Vistaprint.
Wow.
Just add that.
They got you. You're a marketer's dream.
I am.
Fun fact.
My fun fact, I've been reading The Wine Journal by Andrew Kayard and Angus Hewson, and it's a really, really interesting read. There's a lot of information. It's not something that I could read as a novel. It's something that I dive into and out of.
Does it detail, like, regions?
It's about
or
regions
wines
and
or...
then tasting notes and then particular wines from particular regions. But I was just reading, you know, we're seeing this resurgence of Grenache, and I really thought that the Barossa had heaps of Grenache planted, but it's only the third most planted grape variety, with only 686 hectares back in 2018, which sounds like a lot. This is just the Barossa, but compare it to 1,900 hectares of Cabernet and 8,000 hectares of Shiraz.
Wait, so say it again. What was the
686.
So Grenache is 600 and Shiraz is 8,000.
8,000. That's what blew my mind, really. It was the 8,000 of Shiraz.
Yeah, wow.
So I was just like, oh, my God, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So this is a whole, it was a chapter on Grenache and kind of, are we there yet? Have we got the style right?
Have we?
I think we're emerging.
The ones we tasted.
Yeah, we're playing
episode,
around with it. There's a lot of good stuff out
there's
there.
There's some really pretty stuff. I quite like Grenache.
So if people want to, delve into something that they can literally pick down and pick up, whatever this the way it goes, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, well, people ask us a lot how they can continue learning about wine.
Yeah, it's a really interesting read.
Cool. What have you been drinking?
What have I been drinking? We had the other night a Priorat Veyray, it was called. So Priorat is another one of these sort of Grenache-based wines, and it's, you know, this famous Yeet Korea soils and makes these long-lived wines. And I was just amazed how much volatility people can get away with.
Yeah.
Pete tried it and I came home and said, I can't believe you opened it. It's a 60-euro bottle of wine. I was given it at Provine.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, it wasn't very good. And I went, oh, what are you talking about? Tasted it. And it's just, it has this huge level of volatility. Again, when you're running around that 14.5%, 15% alcohol, that does come as part of the wine, but this was very standout-ish.
You might need to explain a bit more.
So volatility is, it's a volatile acid, so it's acetic acid, which is vinegar, or ethyl acetate, which is nail polish remover. So they're the two sort of smells. And yeast produce them during fermentation when they get a little bit stressed, and also there's bacteria that can produce it if the wine's exposed to oxygen. So they consume the alcohol in the wine and they convert it to these volatile acids, basically, and giving the wine this aroma. Now, something like a Grange will definitely have a higher level than volatility than a Barossa, everyday Barossa and Shiraz. But
why is that?
Just because it's higher alcohol, the yeast get a little bit more stressed.
Yeah, okay.
And a friend of mine did, in his honours thesis at uni, did study where it sort of sits, where it's lifted, as we call it. So it adds to the wine as opposed to takes over the wine.
Yeah.
And it was about 1.2 grams in a big red, so it was quite high.
Yeah, okay.
So I think vinegar runs at about a gram.
What? So you're saying they get away with it, as in like it's still perceived as a good pre-red wine?
Yeah,
it
kind of lifts. Yeah, it's part of the... the mix, I think, but we were both very
not good,
not a bit surprised by it at all. And of course, Mr. Brett Detective out there goes, oh, I think it's Bretty.
Brett Detective,
and I didn't think it was Bretty, but it was definitely volatile. And it was an interesting one. It needed food. I came home and had a glass after I'd been doing something, so I wasn't really tasting it in the right ambiance
is everything.
Needed a little bit of jamon.
Oh yeah. All right, you on
everything.
Let's get into it. We're going to look at everything that can go wrong in a vineyard. So basically when we're talking about was it a good year, was it not, what is everything that could lead to it not?
So first I think we'll start in sort of the life cycle of the vine. So in winter you have dormancy, so nothing's going wrong. That's when we prune because there's nothing going on. The vine has literally pulled all its nutrients back into its trunk, and so you can cut off the canes or the shoots that are from last year that do no real damage. When problems start to exist is when in spring, when the little leaves start to emerge, that's called bud burst, and they're really tiny, gentle, soft leaves, and they're fluffy.
Mm.
And this is usually when we get these spring frosts. So what'll happen is the night temperatures will plummet. And what'll happen, and I think we've spoken about this before, is that the water in the leaves, the baby leaves, will freeze, and ice is 9% bigger than water. It expands and it bursts the cells in the leaves, basically killing the leaves. But it also affects the stems, and when the stems grow, that's where the fruit comes out of. So you're basically killing the vine shoot.
Bashes it.
Yep.
Right.
So that's frost issues. So that's early spring.
And that's notorious in places like Chablis, right?
And it's just getting worse. I mean, normally we have these spring frosts.
Yeah.
But you're seeing summer frosts now. So Burgundy was hit in 2021 by a spring frost and then a much later frost as well.
A summer frost?
Yes. So we're seeing these weird conditions. So they basically lost 80% of their grapes.
In a summer frost?
Combined with the two, there were two frost events.
Yeah.
So
you see those like long like barrels of like fire pits in between all the vineyards through Burgundy, and it looks
smudge pots.
So beautiful. It's the most beautiful imagery. Did that actually do anything to help?
They're not hugely effective.
Yeah.
they only work around where they are. I mean, in a place like Burgundy where the vines are quite low, so they're usually planted at just over a metre tall, so that's where the fruiting zone is, they will have some effect. But what happens with a frost is you have the cold air comes down and the warm air's at the top. So what the best thing to do is you're trying to get the warm air at the top back into the vineyard. So you may have seen these like wind farms in vineyards.
Mm.
They work. They're very, very, very expensive to install, but in frost-prone regions they're good to go. In places like New Zealand where they have a lot of money, they actually bring in helicopters.
Yeah, cool.
So that forces the warm air down into the vineyard.
When a frost is – like how early do you know if a frost is going to happen? Like how much time do you have to call a helicopter?
They basically won't sleep that night. They'll look at what the temperature is going to be, and then they will watch it and make sure that – yeah. So the frost is only important – sort of from spring onwards, particularly with these tender leaves and stems.
Yeah,
so that's the first thing that can go wrong.
Yeah, and that's, devastates.
Huge crop losses. Yeah. I think in 1947 or something, the Loire lost everything in a big frost event.
Insane.
And we're just seeing these. I mean, Bordeaux had a frost. Bilbo's by the sea. Yeah. It should not happen by the sea. It's just really, really, really weird.
Yeah.
So if there's no frost, the shoots grow.
You're getting
your flowers starting to form, so it's called inflorescence. And what happens is you've got little flowers and they're like little gum nuts. They've got little caps on them.
Yeah.
So they look like little green berries, to be honest. Yeah. And those caps have to fall off.
Yeah.
And then the flowers have to get fertilized to make berries. So basically get pregnant. Each flower.
That's cute.
Yeah. If we have a lot of rain at that time, the caps don't always fall off properly. They have a thing called sticky cap syndrome. And so one flower will get fertilized and then another will get fertilized and then a week later that berry, that cap will fall off and that'll get fertilized, which means you have this hen and chicken. So you have green berries and ripe berries on the same bunch.
Yeah.
Not such a problem. We can manage it through hand picking, optical sorting in the winery. But if you're making a $10 wine, you're not putting any of that investment behind it. So you've got to deal with those green unripe berries in your ferments because you're dealing with a red wine particularly. So that's another thing that can go wrong. We have what's called fruit set, which is basically all the little flowers are impregnated and they're formed little berries. Mm-hmm. And that's fruit set.
Yep.
So each of those berries grows into a bigger berry. And this is when humidity and warm temperatures coupled with rain come in because the humidity creates the perfect growing environment for molds. If any of you have lived in a humid area, people in Darwin, I have a friend in Darwin who keeps her wedding dress down here.
Oh, really?
Because it will grow mold on it.
Yeah, okay.
So you have to have your clothes on high rotation and everything. So there's two major fungal diseases that occur.
Yeah.
Sort of this powdery mildew. And that can damage the leaves and the stems.
Yeah.
And so the damage to the leaves and the stems means that you're not getting proper photosynthesis. The powdery mildew forms these sort of yellow spots on the leaves. And so because you don't get proper photosynthesis, the vines can't ripen, the grapes can't ripen properly. If it gets really bad, it can actually get into the berries and impact the taste of the berries.
Have we covered photosynthesis?
Photosynthesis is just the process.
I don't remember it from like high school science.
Yeah, everyone would have done this at school. Photosynthesis is where the sunlight comes onto the leaf and there's a little driving engine called chlorophyll, which is what makes plants green. And then that converts the CO2 that it's absorbing from the environment with the water to form carbohydrate.
Mm-hmm.
So sugars, which is the building block of everything, and then they give off oxygen. So it's
like feeding, it's like the energy, right?
It's creating the energy. And the sunlight drives this conversion of carbon dioxide from the environment, which is absorbed through the leaf, with combined through the water, which is coming up through the roots and produces basically carbohydrates, which are the building blocks for everything in the plant. So if you don't have proper photosynthesis in your vine, your grapes won't ripen properly because don't forget they've got sugars in them and sugars are carbohydrates.
Yeah.
So they need that glucose and fructose.
So it's a mold that attacks the leaf.
And the stems.
And the stems.
And it can get onto the berries and impact the flavour. So you can actually see you've got this powdery mildew all over your grapes. In which case my advice would be don't pick it.
Don't pick.
Treatment in the winery is there are things that we can do to mask it and to kind of remove it as much as possible, but you don't 100% get rid of it. And it always leads to wines that develop very early in their use.
Ah.
Yeah.
Can we prevent it?
Yes, fungicidal sprays, which are expensive. And in 2011, the year that everyone wrote off pretty much Australia-wide, not in WA, but the South Australia right through the east coast of Australia, you couldn't get the sprays. There was none in the country.
Why? Because everyone
was using them.
It.
So normally people will do 6 to 7 sprays a year.
Yeah.
And I was talking to one grape grower, I think was it this year or last year, and we were talking in I think December, and she was on spray number 12.
Wow.
So we're trying to be more sustainable in the vineyard. Yeah. Every time you spray, you have to run down the vineyard with your tractor.
Yeah.
You're spraying a petrol-based fungicide. There are more organic alternatives, but they're not as effective.
And, like, is that going to mess with the ecosystem and the animals and stuff? Yeah.
Yep.
So we don't love having to use it.
We don't love having to spray. If we don't have to spray, it's best. It saves money.
Yeah.
Saves time and it's good for the environment.
An organic vineyard, what we just have to put up with.
They can use sulfur dioxide and, believe it or not, copper. So there's a thing called Bordeaux mix, which is a blend of copper, which is an element, and sulfur dioxide. They are trying to reduce the use of it because copper is a heavy metal and so it gets into the soil and it takes years and years and years and years and years to ever be taken out. When we used to work in France in the 90s, you would drive past vineyards and they would be blue because copper's blue. The leaves would be blue from the amount of Bordeaux mix that they'd be putting out on the vineyards.
Oh, my gosh.
We actually got copper poisoning.
Oh, my God. Okay, no, well, that's what I was going to ask because, like, apart from sustainability, there's this whole thing with organics that people are just looking out for their own body and don't like the idea of chemicals. If you're doing 12 sprays, is their chemicals actually making their way into the wine that we're going to drink?
No, we have withholding periods. So for everything that we do in the vineyard, we have a withholding period before we can pick the grapes. So your last spray has to be on X weeks prior to your picking. So that means that all the nastiness is removed. It's done its job.
Mm-hmm.
But the residual nasties have been either metabolized by the grapes or metabolized by the leaves and they've removed. So you can safely consume the wine. So there's no residual problem. So we have withholding periods and we have MRL, so we have minimal residue limits.
Yeah.
So we can measure in wine what it is to see if it's safe for sale. So we know what we can do, what the holding periods are and how much is allowed to be left in the wine before it's considered unsafe.
Right, okay. That's
so
interesting.
It's quite a lot of science. You've got to get your things tested.
Yeah.
If you think you've been spraying a lot. There's a really fantastic product called Phos Acid that is really good for disease, but it has because it's so cheap, it's never been registered. And because it's never been registered, there's no MRL on it. And because there's no MRL on it, Canada and China won't let you import wine that have been treated with it.
Okay.
Even though it is used frequently in avocados and a range of other fruits, it's not just used on grapes. It's very cheap and it's really good for the environment. It doesn't have any major residual effect.
Okay.
The only thing that's left over is basically what will be left over from fermentation anyway.
Yeah.
Now that we don't have China to worry about so much, people have been using it because the other thing is the funguses, the fungi, they overwinter as spores. So just imagine them as tiny little poppy seeds. So there's no fairy fungus.
Uh-huh.
It's just this tiny little poppy seed and that will then grow into a fungus next year when the conditions are right.
Oh.
So if you cut your vines and you've got powdery spores or you've got downy spores and you leave it in your vineyard, you're just basically leaving it for next year. So you should burn all your stuff. Yeah. They overwinter in the vineyard. So you should burn all your cutting material.
Cheeky
but again, burning carbon dioxide, not great for the environment.
No.
Mulching, you can do it and take it away, but it's still there. Spores are like the cockroaches. They will outlive a nuclear holocaust. That's what they're designed to do.
Yeah.
So it's tricky.
It is tricky.
So the other one that we've got with these sort of wet, humid conditions is downy mildew.
Yes.
And that kind of does the same. It forms a sort of a downy, looks like a spider web almost on the back of the leaf, can damage the leaves, can get into the fruit, making the fruit taste really horrible.
How are they different then?
Different fungal agents. So they're two different species.
So same conditions cause them?
Humidity is where fungus loves to grow.
Yeah, okay.
So you're very similar. And some years you'll have powdery outbreaks, some years you'll have downy outbreaks, some years you won't have anything. Mm. This year was there was a bit of powdery around early in the season. People got onto it early, so it was good. So it didn't sort of develop into a problem. But then the last one we've got is botrytis.
Yeah.
Now, everyone probably thinks of botrytis as this lovely,
lovely, amazing,
noble
beautiful
rot.
Way.
So noble rot, the fungus, has a really good bad cousin, grey rot. And if the botrytis doesn't dry out, yeah, it just turns the grapes to mush, and you can taste it. They taste mouldy, and you look at them and they can have furry berries on them.
Yeah.
And the other problem with it is botrytis produces a particular enzyme which, if it gets into your ferment, will oxidize your wine.
Mm.
So it's an enzyme, it's an enzymatic oxidation. It's not an air oxidation. It's more active at higher temperatures. It's more active where there is oxygen available. We have ways of sort of removing it.
Yeah.
But when I used to work in France, the only quality control in some of these big cooperatives was like, had this big stick that they'd stick into the grapes, and it would measure the lactase, which is the enzyme, and over a certain level they wouldn't reject the fruit. They'd just downgrade it and pay a little bit less for it. They'd still take it in to make the wine.
Yeah, okay.
But it gives a distinctly mouldy, yucky flavour to the wine. And you can lose your whole crop.
You could, wow. So if
because it spreads really, really quickly in the vineyard.
Okay.
Because bunches are so tight and they're next to each other and they're on top of each other. And so it's all about vineyard management, having a lot of it, allowing air into your canopy and not having your bunches on bunches on bunches, making sure they're evenly spaced. That will just reduce everything. So that's some of the problems.
Mm.
With the rain that we've had, you've had vineyards that have been flooded and people haven't been able to get in to spray.
Mm.
So what do you do then?
Yeah.
Even, you know.
Wasn't somewhere was completely underwater.
Well, Tobilk was completely. Jen Pfeiffer up at Pfeiffer Estate, her vineyards, but they sprung back. It was amazing.
Wow.
It was just unbelievable. I mean, vines are hardy, and the thing that we love about vines in terms of the world is it's a perennial crop. It stays there forever. Mm. We don't re-sow it every year.
Yeah.
So it is a really good carbon sink, sustainability-wise, but it's just every year brings on new challenges. Like in 2022 we had really low crop levels, so 50% of what we normally pick. Now you might think, great, quality's excellent, sure, but you've guaranteed Joe Bloggs that he's going to get his 500 cases of this, and then you have to turn around and say it's 250 cases.
Yeah.
He gets a bit unhappy. He goes to somewhere else, or you do what the Bordelais have done, the Burgundians, I'm sorry, have done, which is double their prices. We just can't do that. We're not a strong enough market to say, okay, you're paying double for Chablis now.
Yeah.
So we have to absorb that cost.
And so you've described before that like lower yields mean that you're going to get a high quality grape.
Yeah.
But I think that that's the common thing that people understand that, but they don't understand yet the effect that it has on actual wine business in the wine world. And
if you want to make a premium end wine, you actively drop your crop to improve the quality, but you charge a premium.
Yeah.
But you're making, I don't know, a $25 bottle of wine, and suddenly you've got half the crop.
Yeah.
You can't double your prices. Yeah. And the other thing is when people are hand picking, because it's not like half the bunches are there, it's the bunches way less.
So like each berry is just smaller.
Yeah. So say Pinot bunches normally run around 90 to 110 grams. Let's just say that's sort of where they sit. And they come in at 50.
Mm.
The pickers are still picking the same number of bunches. So it's taking the same amount of time. Exactly. But you're paying double effectively because you're getting half the crop. So what would normally cost $500 a ton is costing you $1,000 a ton.
So how do you end up with a lower yield then? How do the berries end up smaller?
It's that fruit when you have uneven fruit set.
Mm.
It's the flowering hasn't occurred sort of properly, and you don't have at warm enough conditions to actively sort of force the photosynthesis to get enough weight on those berries.
And that's what's happened this year, right? We're getting low yields this year.
Not too bad. I mean, it's about 20% lower.
Mm.
I think also in the Yarra Valley it's really hard because we are replanting because of phylloxera. So we used to say we do this many 10,000 tonne or whatever. Well, we're not because the grapes just aren't available because everyone's replanting.
Mm.
But, yeah, this year we're definitely down, but it's way better than it was last year. I mean, it is crazy. And lower yields you know, there's absolutely nothing you can do. Yeah. It's not like you can add extra.
Yeah.
You know? And lower yields tend to occur, it's not just in a region. You know, Mornington we know is really hard to get at the moment because they've had a couple of bad low yielding years. So, you know, just even in Dan's, selection in Dan's has decreased because of that inability to provide the market.
And so this is an interesting thing, right? So when we're saying it's been a good year, we kind of want, from like a business perspective, yields to be up. But what a consumer would be thinking right now is you're saying prices aren't going up, but yields were down, therefore quality was up, therefore I'm going to get a good...
You're getting more bang for buck.
You're getting great bang for buck, so by 2020.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, in Australia at the moment, we are in a, you know, this is the other thing, but it is such a market-driven agricultural business that... Australia is in a little bit of oversupply at the moment, in certainly Shiraz and Cabernet, because the Chinese used to take it and they're not taking it anymore.
Yes.
Somewhere like the Yarra Valley and Mornington Peninsula, we're not in that position at all. So there's this sort of this broader message, oh, there's plenty of cheap wine to be had out there, and we're sitting there going, we can't make enough.
Yeah.
We just don't have enough.
Yeah.
And it's coinciding when Pinot and Chardonnay are sort of hitting their, you know, the zenith of popularity.
Oh, yeah.
So you can see wineries, you know, a friend of mine was talking the other day that he heard rumours of wine being sold for 13 cents a litre in Provine.
Oh my God.
I don't
God.
Know whether it's true, but it's just, it's crazy. Like, what's happening is now growers in these large regions like the Riverland, who used to supply the big companies who exported a gazillion litres to China, have nowhere for their fruit to go. They don't have contracts, so they're just a spot buys. They've always been able to sell their fruit, and now they can't get their children to run the vineyards, and they are just leaving. Yeah. It's called mothballing. They're just leaving their vineyards, and they're now saying that we should have a vine pool system, which is what's happened in France or a lot of Europe, to promote people to pull vines out.
Yeah, in Australia.
People are floating the idea.
I know. Didn't know that. That's crazy.
Yep, that's crazy. You would never grow grapes. I was talking to a guy I work with today, and I said, did you plant your vineyard? And he said, yep. And I said, why? And he said, if I knew what I knew now, I would never have done it. And people do it because they think it's really romantic and it's really sweet and I'm going to make my own wine.
Yeah, the lifestyle.
Blah, 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 blah.
It looks amazing from the outside.
Yeah, and he was with Moët Hennessy, so he knew the business.
He knew the realities, yeah.
Yeah, but I think just my heart for growers just goes out. And also people tend to think that a lot of wine is this little she domain. So you own Domaine Mel, you grow a couple of hectares of little grapes and you hand make all of your wine. It is not that. No. That is not what the industry is. The Australian wine industry is worth billions, or a couple of billion. It employs lots and lots of people, and if the vineyards are being pulled out, what are they going to do in the Riverland?
Yeah.
What are they going to do in the Barossa?
Yeah.
You know, what are they going to do in the Coonawarra or Padthaway? Because it's employing young people, and so you'll just have the moving away.
Wow.
It's just... You know, and years like this, and they're now saying that La Nina, which has brought this wet, cool conditions, and that's the other thing with vintage, I don't know about you guys, but it's just dragging on. People can't get the – because it's so cool and it's been a cool summer, Cabernet is struggling to ripen because it needs a little bit of heat. I mean, it'll definitely get there and it'll produce classic Yarra Cabernet. I'm not too worried about the coolness for Cabernet, but people are sort of sitting there going, oh, we just want vintage to end.
And the longer that it's on the vines, the longer all these problems
the more
have
risk you
to come up.
Yep. And also when it rains, so say you say, oh, I'm going to pick on Thursday and suddenly, and you've planned that a week out because you've done your analysis and I think it's going to be 13 Beaumet by Thursday, and then suddenly you look at the weather and you go, shit, we're getting 50 mils of rain on Wednesday.
Yeah.
If you can't get your fruit off, you're picking suboptimal ripeness if you do get it off, but if you can't get it off, the vine takes up that water, diluting and undoing all that ripeness that you've done and making it really, really hard to then make you. Do I wait another week? And then I look, you look at the, your phone and you go, oh my God, there's 3 days of rain.
And then it's Easter weekend. And can I pay someone to do public holiday rates to pick at optimal ripening?
I know a winery that was picking, hand picking on Good Friday.
Oh, God.
That would be so minimum expensive. $60, $58 an hour.
Oh, my God.
In a lowish yielding year.
Oh, no.
Crazy.
Yes.
It's just nuts. So there is just, it's just ongoing. You know, we have great seasons. 2021 was spectacular. We had good volume, quality, weather was great.
Mm.
But these grape growers, they must age really quickly because it's just one event after another. And we didn't even mention hail.
Yes, yeah.
Because we had hail come through this year.
Yeah.
So hail comes through, biggest damage really is when it's during the ripening because the berries are softer. So the hail comes down and it's like you've got a slingshot with stones in it and it rips through the leaves, damaging the leaves.
Yeah.
But it also can rip into the berries and then disease can come in because insects carry disease. So they can bring in this lovely thing called sour rot.
Which sounds awesome.
Your whole vineyard smells like a pickled onion.
Oh.
It's all very vinegary and gross.
Disgusting.
And wasps can do damage and kangaroos can do damage and birds do damage.
True. I was at a winery we're doing like a Segway tour around the winery and there's all these tourists from like in different countries who are all excited to see kangaroos and they're like, we hope to see kangaroos. And then we came across all these dead kangaroos because they'd been shot because they're pests.
They don't, thankfully they don't actually eat grapes, but they're big and they will jump through your vines and they can take out posts and everything. And yeah, we do. I was with
birds.
Yeah, birds.
Birds eat
grapes. And in Australia, we've planted grapes where we traditionally had a lot of fruit trees. So the Yarra Valley was very much cherries.
Mm.
And so the birds have gone, I don't care. I'll go from cherries to
I'll grapes. Eat whatever you put out for
whatever
me.
Whatever there is. And the worst thing is, it's not just do they eat the grapes. Maybe they'll just take a little nibble out of one, leaving a hole, letting fungal diseases get in, letting other diseases getting in. So that's why we have the nets. But then there's all this complaint with the nets that we are killing species of birds that we shouldn't be killing. Indian minor birds, we don't care. We can kill as many of those as we like. But often you'll see the birds flapping around under the nets anyway.
Yeah, you
I
do.
Mean, they get in there. And I've seen kangaroos caught in the nets.
The people getting married don't like the nets either.
No, no,
they don't look pretty.
<It's the nets. laughs>
But when we were at Heathcote, remember one of the winemakers said that the birds love his Sangiovese, but they don't care about his Cabernet? And you turn to me and goes, oh my God, not even the birds love Cabernet.
That's so true.
I died.
But now they've got these, you may have seen Levantine Hill has got these lasers. Have you seen those?
You told me about those.
They are that amazing.
So
I don't
funny.
Know how effective they are. I haven't dun, really dun, spoken dun, to Bridget, dun, dun, but if you drive out, it's sort of, they come on in the morning at dawn because that's when the birds start coming out and they constantly move around the vineyard and they're these green lasers. They literally look like a Star Wars movie.
You just like imagine the birds doing Mission Impossible, like like leaning backwards to slip onto the ladder to get to the ground.
Wearing their little skivvies. That's very cute.
I'm learning so much about sparkling grapes, though, because, A, we don't need nets because we pick them.
It's too early.
While they still have so much acidity, the birds are like, oh, yuck.
Yeah, they want the sugar.
They want the sugar. And also, Dan, the winemaker, was saying to me the other day that even from, like, a taste perspective, he wants higher yields. So in still wine, it's like if you get less yields, it's higher quality. But for him, he's like, no, I still want the big yields. And he was saying that because for like Pinot, because we make sparkling, the smaller berries, you're more likely to get way more colour. And it's kind of more he has to do with it in the winery to get the colour out.
Makes sense.
Which
it's
just
really interesting.
I never thought of that.
Yeah.
It's like, huh, for still wineries, it's better at least. At least you've got that.
You want a lower juice to skins ratio than you guys. You guys just want the juice, really. Yeah. It just happens to have a red skin around it or a purple skin around it. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's fun.
Wine is amazing. You never stop learning.
It's very cool. And I think, I mean, I just hope that gives more context to people that, like, when you pay money for wine, like, my God, so much has gone into it.
Oh, and just the stress level. That's what I just feel for them. And the growers particularly I feel for, because they are the unsung heroes. They bring us the great fruit. They have all the stress. They can lose their whole crop, their whole entire income.
Yeah.
Like that. And there's no compensation. Yeah. There's no insurance. And then we've got fires on top of that. And we've got smoke tape that can come in.
We didn't even have the smoke tape.
We could just keep going.
It could just never end.
So if it's either raining and cold and miserable and fungal, or then we have hot and, you know, we have the risk of fires.
And like, people don't realise with smoke chain, and it's like the fire doesn't have to be in your vineyard. No. It just has to be somewhere around, and you don't actually know if it's tainted until you make it, right?
No. So what you do is with smoke taint, it's the things that have impacted it. Distance from the fire, obviously, how long the smoke settles, and you know when you have those bushfire days, it just sits there for weeks on end often.
Yeah.
What you do is you pick a sample and you make the smoke tank compounds are bound to sugars, so they don't become evident until you ferment. It's just dastardly devious.
It is so
unfair.
So you still have to pick it and ferment it.
So you do a little batch fermentation. You send that to the AWRI, the Australian Wine Research Institute. They tell you whether you got it, so whether you need to pick your grapes or make rosé. Obviously, it's more important.
You can make rosé.
You can, because you're fermenting off skins.
Oh.
Yep. So it doesn't impact whites and rosé grapes as much. But there's only so much rosé that you can make. And you were saying that some dude was making a distillery product in Adelaide Hills? He was taking the smoke tainted grapes?
There's a distillery. But there's a place in Gippsland that's making a smoke tainted wine and using it as a selling point.
Oh, okay. Well, in Adelaide Hills, a guy took the smoke tainted grapes and he distilled them
but he
actually bought them, so he helped them out, and it was
we like that,
but it was very, very cool. So smoke taint, but we have now in the Yarra these boxes at various vineyards that we can then analyze for what the smoke taint chemicals are. And the other thing is, one of the chemicals that causes smoke taint is naturally present in grapes anyway. So syringol is naturally present, but the baseline varies by region and grape variety. So we're trying to get natural baselines as well. It's just, honestly, and smoke taint really wasn't a thing until, was it 2009 was the first year that we knew about it? And we're leading the way in research. And Californians, you know, follow us. And we used to think that if the berries were green, that it didn't matter, but that's not true, because the smoke taint chemicals can actually come in the leaves and get transported all the way down into the grapes.
Fuck.
It's just a shit show.
It is. So much goes into what you drink, honestly.
That's true. It's not easy.
It's insane what we go through, considering beer can just make the same recipe.
They just buy the grain on the open market and brew it.
Well, hope that gives you a good understanding of everything that goes.
Hope it wasn't too depressing. I think Mel was a little worried that I didn't bring out all my fact sheets.
No, I think it was a really good episode. I hope. Well, our geeks will still be with us for this one. This was like a high technical episode, but I think it was really worth doing. Okay, so now we're going to do the final drop, previously known as
random shit out of the wine fridge.
Yeah, I decided we had to rebrand it.
You can tell she's in marketing. That's what I said today. The final drop.
These wineries are sending us their lovely wine that they've like poured their heart
and
soul into.
And I'm like, a bit insulting.
I just don't think we should call it random shit from the wine fridge. So it's the final drop. So this one's really fun. When we put up our Vidalo episode, we have a listener, Alex, who's been listening pretty much since the start. Like, there's a handful of people that I recognize that
Alex, girl or boy Alex?
Yeah.
Yep.
And She's like, she messages us and she puts this on her Instagram and stuff. Good. It's really cute. And then when we had the episode, she was so excited because she said, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, I work for Margaret. I'm the Hunter Valley Newcastle sales rep.
Oh, yeah. So cool. Like,
that's so cool. And then she said, we actually have an aged one that's a 2017. Do you guys want to try it? I'm like, yes, of course we do, Alex.
So we've got it.
Send it down. So she sent it straight away. And I asked her to introduce it for us. So here she is.
Hey, Megan Mel. My name is Alex, and I'm Margan Wines' local sales representative. All Margan Wines are estate grown and estate made, certified sustainable, and we are working towards becoming carbon neutral without buying any carbon offsets. I have sent you a bottle of Margan's 2017 Verdello from the Broke Fortich region of the Hunter Valley. As the Verdello ages, it begins to turn into a more golden color. The wine is very aromatic and has a bit of honeysuckle aroma on the nose and on the palate. It has rich tropical fruit flavors that suit food with fresh chili. I hope you guys enjoy. Thank you very much.
That was incredibly comprehensive. Thank you.
I know. I want to know if she wrote that down and said it or if she just did that all in one, because that
was
impressive.
She's a salesperson, yeah. So they are usually very good. So she's right. Alex is right. It definitely has more of a gold tone. There's still a bit of a green tinge to it though. Oh, it's creamed honey.
Yeah. It smells aged. Like, it's still fresh and fruity, but
it's still got that guava melon with creamed honey notes. I don't get as much as the honeysuckle.
Mmm.
Oh, that is beautiful. And the acid. This is what amazes
acid.
Me. I mean, I know they can add acid. I just want to have a look at...
It's got like this creamy, oily texture.
So I just want to say this is a white label wine, which is their small volume, because the one that we tried was their entry level that just blew us away at, what, $14 or something crazy.
Yeah. That one was super like grapefruity and stuff.
So this is 13% alcohol. Don't feel... I would have said it was lower. That is beautiful. Yeah, there's guava, melon...
Oh, that – I love those wines that have – that manage to do like a creamy, oily mouthfeel but then also have like this piercing acid at the same time. It's like a juxtaposition in your mouth and I'm into it.
It's beautiful and it would go great with food. I don't know that I'd go chili because I'm kind of getting some sort of saffron vibe out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So totally. I'd be thinking almost, you know, a risotto Milanese just with the saffron through it or paella.
And you know what? This is actually paella. This is actually like transforming as it warms up a bit.
It's actually quite cold. Mel brought it over and it was warm. We threw it in the freezer. But it's actually...
Yeah, well, because we spoke for so long in this episode. It's a long one.
Well, we thought it was only going to be 10, 20 minutes, but,
I know, we got
diseases.
So the other thing that she's pointed out is she said that... 40% of their wines are bottled in lean and green range, which is 45% lighter than the same product in other ranges. So it saves 234 grams of CO2 per bottle.
Yeah, because it's transport to the winery, away from the winery. Price? Do we have a price on this? And is it available or do people just go online? Good salesperson.
Yeah,
didn't do the sales pitch. Gave us all the wine knowledge, but didn't do the sales pitch. And this is what amazes me. You know, Hunter Valley produces one of the greatest age-worthy wines in the world, Semillon. And now I would have never have thought Verdello. I would have thought because I've had it as a fortified.
Yes,
and I've had it as a fresh, fruity entry-level wine. I have never had one aged.
Me either, and that is why I was like, yes, send it now.
Yeah, it's probably
and
delicious.
I am just so freaking obsessed with aged white wine. It has to be my favourite genre of wine.
Yeah.
And it is so exciting to find a new white varietal that can do fun things in the bottle.
Only 6 years in.
Oh.
And it's got a long way to go.
Very cool. $60.
Okay.
I'd pay it, personally.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
You know what I'd do, though? I'd buy the current release, actually, and lay it down because that'll be way cheaper.
Yeah, it will, but then you have to wait 6 years for it to taste like this.
Elephant, don't invite you around, I'll be okay.
Oh, so that that is
thank you very much, Alex. That's a real treat.
Thank you, Alex. That's really cool. This wine, I've just had a look and it is available on their website for $60. So definitely check that out, Margan. We will be back with you next week. What are we doing next week?
Next week we're doing cellar release.
Oh, okay, so we're going to have a little battle. Me and Meg have both gone to our local dance stores, and you know how there's like that cellar section where you just find like random aged stuff, and we've both found two bottles each, and we're going to have like a bit of a battle to see who found the best drug.
Oh,
okay. Meg's feeling confident. We'll see you then. Make sure you're following us on Instagram. We put up every wine that we taste and a bunch of other content. But until next time, enjoy your next glass of wine
and drink well.